Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Forgiven Again by Gina Holder. She's running for governor. He's a pastor. Will they risk their lives to keep a secret? Annie Statton, now known as Kathleen Phillips, has dreamed of pursuing a political career and following in her father's footsteps. But Richard was a hated man during his tenure as governor, and now his enemies will stop at nothing to prevent his daughter from winning the election. Ryan Whitestone has loved Annie since high school, but his heart is broken by the woman she has become. When the daughter she gave up for adoption comes back into her life, can he help her heal from her pain and remind her of who she used to be? Will Kathleen be able to forgive herself, put the past behind her, and find love again?
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I am so glad you joined me. Today I'm talking with author Gina Holder, who has dreamed of being a writer since her early teens. When she's not homeschooling her daughter or working on her next novel, she enjoys, and I love this list, Gina, reading, watching movies, cooking, singing, and playing the piano and organ. So welcome to my show, Gina.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here with you today.
So you enjoy many of the things that I enjoy, so cooking, watching movies, reading, although I must admit I prefer when my kids cook more than me, so I should probably rephrase that. Do you find that, you know, kind of as you're cooking or watching movies, do you draw inspiration from that for your writing, or is it kind of a relaxing thing for you, those hobbies?
Well, cooking, I would say more of that I spend time focused on what I'm doing. But as far as watching movies, yes, absolutely. I use it to draw from inspiration as far as character ideas, flaws for the characters, plot engines, and how other writers have put together the steps to create a plot. And just when I relax my mind that way, I am also able to think of things for my own books, and ideas come to mind. So sometimes I actually have to write things down and know that better save that for a coming story.
Yes, yeah, I know. I'm always coming across little things like little snippets of a news story or something, you know, that I see and think, huh, and what if, ... because us romantic suspense writers are always looking to twist normal things into either terrifying and or scary things, right? What if this happened and I don't know if I should be afraid that my mind works that way or glad, given that, you know, writing romantic suspense is kind of fun. But yeah, I find that getting inspiration from a lot of different places can be really fun to, you know, to write. But writing them down is key, isn't it?
Oh, yes. The last thing I tell myself is, I'll remember that. No, I won't.
We don't. It's terrible. Yeah, I sometimes have some of my best ideas in the shower, and then I have to, you know, get out and I kind of like repeat it over and over in my mind. Remember this and repeat whatever it is so I can write it down and not forget it.
Yes, notes on my phone is my best friend.
Yes. That is so true. What would we do without those? I tell you what. It would not be pretty. That's for sure. So how do you, as a romantic suspense writer, you talked a little bit about the plot. How do you kind of come up with your plots in general? Are you a plotter? Do you kind of plot them out? Do you just do your characters? How does your story come together?
I am a plotter wannabe. I wish I could plot out my stories. I keep trying, but more, I'm just a pantser. I usually start with a character and a name, and I know the essence of this character and what I want to happen, and then the plot kind of builds from there. I have to think of, well, how can I put this character in situations that will make them move forward and trust God and work through the circumstances in the way that would create a good story to read. And I know kind of some of the other characters and then have to build on how they'll interact with each other. And so, I, you know, I said, I wish I could plot more, but I end up have an idea of where I want to go, the theme that I would like to express, and then just see what happens from there.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm kind of the same way. I'm more of a pantser, and for those of you who are listening don't realize, that just means that we kind of write by the seat of our pants. That's kind of the definition. But I'm trying to get into...
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
My last book, Forgiven Again, the one that you're going to be sharing about, the villain changed 4 times. That was after it was written. I could not write the ending and figure out who had been this villain this whole time.
Well, sometimes they don't tell us our characters, right? I mean, they keep things from us. And in one of my books, I had something happen, and then it was later, and I'd kind of forgotten it, and then I remembered it, and then I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was writing, so I was thinking, oh, wait a minute, this is why that happened back then. My subconscious just had kind of figured it out. I'm like, thank you, subconscious.
Plot holes are my nemesis.
Yes, I know. They're hard not because and we know how we all know how frustrating it is to read a book, especially a mystery or romantic suspense or suspense, and you reach the end and you're like, yeah, but why did the dog die in chapter 5? I mean, you know, I mean, there's like some, you knew there had to be some connection and there was no connection made. And you're like, did everyone just forget about the dog? It could be like the letter they received or, you know, X, Y, Z. It just, and so I always try to be really careful when I get toward the end of my book and I'm finishing a book now. And I kind of went back and I try to have pretty detailed chapter summaries. And I went back and was like, okay, what happened? Then I realized, oh, somebody said they were going to give him an envelope, and that envelope has not shown up. So I'm like, I need to have the envelope show up now. So the reader's not going, I thought she was going to put it on his car. Why didn't she do that? To tie those loose ends together so that the story is satisfying and that the readers are satisfied. And I think that can be kind of hard to do sometimes when you're a pantser. So I've been trying to do more plotting, more, you know, so I kind of know where the story's going so I can have less angst at the end like I'm in the middle of now.
I'm trying to get where I write down what takes place in each scene as I build them so that way later on I can look back and say, oh, that's right, this is where they were going to go, or this is what this person said was going to happen next. I should probably put that in there now.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost like, if we want to use a cooking analysis, you know, we're building this elaborate dessert or cake, because, you know, why, let's talk about something fun instead of broccoli, right? And, you know, and if you forget that you added this spice, yeah, you might be in trouble if you don't balance it out with, you know, with another spice so it's not overpowering or something like that. You can tell I'm not really a cook. I should not have used that analogy. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I think we need to change this up. Let's get off cooking. So what are some of the favorite ways you have of connecting with readers of your books?
I use Facebook most of the time, and I love when I get little notes from readers, whether that's on Messenger or on my Facebook page, or they use my blog to send me a note. And I love hearing how that the story has blessed them. You know, that's the most meaningful, is to hear that the story in some way touched their lives.
Yes. Yeah, and I think it's just so neat that we can have so many different ways for readers to be in touch with us, that we can share things with readers. And if you're listening, yes, you can get a list of all of Gina's social media and online links, so you can
and
check
I,
her out
yes,
there.
Yes, I have a blog, and I share a lot about other books that are being released. I'm trying to focus in on romantic suspense and mysteries, and I'm often share on there things that I'm doing as far as building my new stories, and I'll share the cover reveals and the first line when I'm finished. And I plan for this coming year, I'm going to incorporate cooking. We're back to that. But cooking and then connecting it to a book that someone could read, a book that takes place in a country that I'll also have recipes and pictures of after trying these recipes from a particular country. And I think that would be an interesting concept for readers to enjoy.
Yes, yes, especially if you're, you know, able to recreate the recipes. Don't ask me to do it. I did have a recipe. This is a funny story. So my first romantic suspense, Dangerous Christmas Memories, mm-hmm. with love-inspired suspense, I had my hero have to throw together this meal from some cans and boxes in this cabin where he's being held captive with the heroine by the a villain. And I, you know, I was thinking, because it's, he couldn't have fresh things, had to use all these cans. And so I decided, well, I'm going to make that at home for my family and just see, is it terrible? Is it any good? I don't know. You know, my characters kind of ate it because it was, they're hungry, right? And when you're hungry, you'll eat just about everything, anything. And so I created it and took a picture and did the recipe and wrote the recipe down. And actually, it was quite decent. You know, it wasn't like, you know, hey, let's have this every day, but it was definitely edible. So I did post that on my blog, and when I had back before everything was shut down, I was at a craft show selling my books, and I gave that away. That was one of like the free things, the little recipe uh-huh. card. So that was fun, but I was like, that was way too much pressure and work, so I'm probably never going to do that again. Yeah, so more power to you.
My current work in progress of book three of the series involves a coffee shop. I hate coffee. So I now have to write this story. Well, all three books have involved coffee, and so hopefully those who drink coffee can't tell that I don't like it.
Yes. I mean, I'm not a coffee drinker either. My husband, though, really likes it. So I just look at how he does things. I'm like, okay, uh-huh. I can write that in there. All right, you stick the little pod in, you push it. That's how it happens there. He has this Chemex pour-over coffee. So I've used that, you know, because that's like uh-huh. what the real people who really, 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 really love coffee do. And I'm like, okay. Adding all this stuff and trying to figure out, okay, what kind of colors does coffee come in? And, yeah, because I know people drink it, and I've got to stop having all my characters drink tea because that's what I drink. And I'm like, yes, I need to bring in the coffee world. Yeah, so it's kind of fun. I feel like mm-hmm. I kind of can educate myself in that, even though, yeah, I'm with you. I do not like the taste of it. But I haven't set mine in a coffee shop yet. So way to be bold, Gina, and embrace the coffee. Well, I am looking at the time, and we are almost out of time. Is there anything else about your writing that you'd like to share with our readers before we sign off? I mean, our listeners.
Well, I am working on book 3 of the Shadows Over Whitman series. And so I hope everyone will keep an eye out for that, hopefully by the end of this year.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You have been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I've been your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with author Gina Holder, who's working on writing romantic suspense novels. Stay tuned for an excerpt from her Forgiven Again, and I hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Forgiven Again by Gina Holder. Thursday evening, supporters and dissenters alike filled the crammed folding chairs, eagerly anticipating the Oregon gubernatorial debate. The blinding spotlights overhead forced Anna Kathleen Staton Phillips to squint as she waited on the auditorium platform of Roosevelt High School in Portland. The incumbent governor's voice echoed as she gave her opening statements. Kathleen straightened a crease in the lapel of her black suit jacket and tugged at the hem of her skirt, where her knees peeked out from the edge of the fabric. She raised her eyes and surveyed her competition. To her left sat Dr. Calvin Bale, a brain surgeon. His gray hair, glasses, and expensive suit exuded wisdom and distinction. A newcomer, Isaiah Orozco, fidgeting with his note cards, sat to her right. He looked to be 10 years her junior, giving him a disadvantage with the older generations, but an advantage with the younger. Kathleen's fingers brushed the crow's feet and frown lines marring her own face. Time had been kind, but still, these marks of her age and the gray hairs she regularly dyed crept faster than she'd like. She shifted her gaze to the front of the stage. The governor wore a dark pantsuit and red slingbacks, with her hair styled in a short pixie cut. She'd been governor for the past 4 years and was advocating for a second term. Do I have a chance to beat her? Many Oregonians agreed with her policies and appreciated the changes she'd made in this state. Others did not. Would the voters choose the familiar or opt for a change? Do I have what it takes to win their confidence? I can do this. Kathleen eyed the note cards clutched in her trembling hands. I know what to say. Just say it. Don't worry about the outcome. But how could she not? This campaign was a culmination of childhood dreams and plans. Her current position as mayor of Whitman was merely a stepping stone on her climb to greater things. With every breath in her body, Kathleen longed to erase the events of the past few months and forget she'd ever met Brooklyn Page McDonald. Back in April, Paige arrived in Whitman looking for her birth mother. At first, Kathleen believed it was a political stunt to coerce her into withdrawing from the election. But soon, she was unable to deny reality. Paige was the child she'd given up for adoption. Kathleen's father, Richard Staton, had abandoned the baby at a fire station rather than turn her over to an adoption agency. Her father's betrayal had blindsided Kathleen, but she also understood his motive. A scandal would have devastated his campaign for governor back in the early 90s. She now faced the same dilemma. Kathleen's line of sight flickered to the pack of journalists lying in wait, licking their bloodthirsty lips like wolves. If they caught a whiff of the undiscovered dirt, they'd stop at nothing to expose her as a fraud. Kathleen had asserted that Paige maintain her distance to prevent the exposure of the secret that could be detrimental to Kathleen's campaign. So far, Paige had respected her wishes. Kathleen and Joe Donahue, her campaign manager and press agent, overcame the damage done by Kathleen's brother, Eric Staton, the head of a notorious crime ring. He was in prison now, but not before attempting to steal thousands of dollars worth of artwork and nearly murdering Kathleen for witnessing his crimes. Another scandal would eradicate the respect she'd worked to achieve. Over the incumbent's shoulder, Kathleen made eye contact with one of the journalists. He narrowed his eyes to slivers over his high cheekbones and pursed lips. His press pass was unreadable from the stage, but everything about him screamed professional. This was no mere freelancer. She'd have to watch out for him. One wrong answer to his questions could lead to slander and disgrace, something she couldn't and wouldn't risk. She took a deep breath to calm her nerves, her chest rising and falling with the motion. Tonight, she had one goal: dodge their questions and escape the evening with nothing surfacing that could endanger her campaign as a gubernatorial candidate. "The reporters don't know anything about what happened. Why would they even ask? Besides, everyone makes mistakes. That happened years ago. No one's going to find out." Dad's voice rumbled through her head, like thunder echoing through the Wallowa Mountains.
"Never apologize. Simply move on."
Move on. That's what she had been doing until her biggest mistake boomeranged back into her life. "Thank you for listening." The incumbent governor finished her speech and returned to her chair. A smug smile tinted her face. "That woman believes she has this election in the bag." The official moderator, a middle-aged woman with the looks and demeanor of a stereotypical sitcom high school principal, stepped to the microphone. All she was missing was the wooden ruler to crack across her palm. "If the candidates will step to their podiums, we will commence with questions at this time." Each candidate took their place behind the polished wood podiums. "The first question is for Kathleen Phillips. Miss Phillips, what is your plan to deal with the lack of rural internet connectivity in our state?"
"Easy question. I've got this."
Kathleen opened her mouth to answer, but a piercing scream split her eardrums.
"What's going on?"
"He's got a gun!"
a male voice shouted. The room erupted with chaos. The crowd split, exposing a wild-looking man aiming a handgun at the stage. His eyes flamed with rage. An authoritative voice shouted out orders. Instinctively, Kathleen dropped to the stage, shielding her head with her arms. A shot rang out. Footfalls and chairs slamming into one another joined the attendees' screams of terror. Steps thundered across the hollow stage, passing her, and headed for the incumbent governor. Kathleen slowly raised her head. Was it safe to look? Uniformed officers wrestled the gun from the shooter's tight-fisted hands, then pinned him face down on the floor. Handcuffs snapped around his wrists. The shooter spat curses that made Kathleen's ears bleed. An officer leaped onto the stage.
"Is everyone all right?"
"I'm fine," the governor answered, an uneasy quiver in her voice.
The male candidates stood, brushed off their trousers, and responded to the affirmative. Kathleen rocked back on her haunches and nodded. Her voice lodged in her throat, and her pulse pounded in her chest. Adrenaline surged through her veins. Had someone tried to assassinate the governor? A security officer nearby motioned to another.
"Sir, you'll want to see this."
What were they looking at?
Kathleen fixated on the light passing through a splintered hole in the back of her podium. She couldn't tear her eyes from the ragged-edged crater. Nausea roiled her stomach. Blood drained from her face, and she dug her fingernails into her palms. The second officer lifted his radio to his lips and spoke, but his words didn't register. The gunman hadn't been aiming for the governor. She was the target. Someone had tried to kill her.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.